Welcome everyone to a brand new episode of the Outer Rim News Show. Today we're talking about the final episode of Obi-Wan Kenobi. This episode had everything in my opinion. I don't know about Austin and Ray's opinion. We have not really discussed the episode in really any detail at all. Just the kind of, did you like it? Yeah, did you like it kind of thing. But I absolutely love this episode. It reinforced a lot of things about the original trilogy, and it brought every episode together and answered lots of questions. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to dive deep into this episode tonight with a review. But before we can do that, we have to introduce the co-host of the show. First up is Mr. Austin Gordy, and that's because he's first in the list here. Oh my God. Okay, and next up is Mr. Ray Snedeker.
I am not Ray Snedeker. I'm what remains.
There we go. I'm totally missing this pop culture reference. What is that from?
I don't know if it was great. I love it.
I thought it was like Mark Hamill's, what is it, Animal Man?
What are you talking about? That's from this episode. That was the exact.
Oh, God. Yes. Okay. Yeah, I get it now. Oh, geez. Okay. Sorry.
I'm just hamming it up.
Yes.
Hamming it up.
My bad. So, how many times have we seen this episode, Austin?
Uno.
Just the one.
I actually went back and watched it a second time afterward.
I wanted to go back and see it. I just hadn't had time yet due to work and stuff. So that one was one
where I definitely felt like I needed to have a second go at it to really kind of let it soak in. Mm-hmm. Also, I kind of wanted to be able to sit a little bit closer to a TV because when I watched it with my wife, we kind of watched it in the bedroom. So we were kind of far back from our TV, and it's not a gigantic TV. Mm-hmm. So being able to sit closer to it in my office, I was able to kind of absorb the details, the little nuances better.
I got you. Yeah, I've seen it a couple of times, and then I've seen bits and pieces, you know, just fast-forwarding through it to watch again and again. Because this episode, to me, had a little bit of everything. You know, the adventure, yes. The excitement, yes.
The drama.
The tears.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, this had a little bit of everything to me. Even my wife teared up at one of the scenes, too. And I was like, I mean, she's a Star Wars fan, but she's not a Star Wars fan, you know, like I am. Mm-hmm. But she even teared up at one point in it, but I teared up like two more times too, which is crazy. We'll get into that. So let's just start reviewing it just like we normally do from the beginning. So we start off with on Tatooine, and Reva apparently has, I don't know how she does it. Does she travel through like a wormhole or something?
The world between worlds.
Yeah, I mean, now, how did she get from?
I mean, obviously, it's the writers that said she needs to get there, so she gets there.
Yeah,
I'd say the easiest explanation would be that the Inquisitors probably most likely have their own personal ships, kind of like that she took with her when, you know, she probably had a personal ship to get to the planet he found Leia, Dio. Remember, she came to Dio alone, so most likely Inquisitors can have their own little ships.
Nah, in the previous episode, she landed with Stormtrooper.
Yeah, but I'm saying that there's probably a ship on the planet, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure she procured in some way.
It's the Kylo Ren conundrum. They need a ship, they get there.
This episode itself, I felt like you have to, like, it fell in line with the rest of the series in that you have to kind of suspend belief or disbelief or whatever. Like, you have to, you know, you kind of have to roll with it a little bit.
Yeah. You know? Most definitely. Yes. Yes. So anyway, she ends up on Tatooine really quick. Mm-hmm. And then comes the worst actor in the show. The redneck. What's his name? I don't even know his name. Big dude with the beard. Trying to steal water.
Big dude McBeardy.
Big dude.
He reminded, you know who he reminded me of? What wasn't that guy's name like Randall Cobb or Randall Ty Cobb or something like that? Some sort of or Randall Tex Cobb. It was like some character actor from like the 80s and 90s. You'd see him pop up and stuff. The main thing I can remember him from was Ace Ventura at the very beginning. He was the one that had that dog. You know, he was he had to sign for it and everything. That guy, Raising Arizona. I was going to say, he reminded me of that dude. So I was thinking of him the whole time. Like, how did he get on that old Tatooine?
And you know, now that you say that, he does. That's him. Well, I don't know if that's him, but that's who he reminds me of. He doesn't talk like him. Yeah. But he talks really, they need to find somebody else. But that's neither here nor there. And then Reva.
Listen, we were getting it was the Southerners getting representation in Star Wars.
Okay. That's right. You going to wait your turn. I got this is my water, boy.
Well, we was like, he had like Bullock County, Southern, Bullock County accent. It's like people's like, Candler represent? Like, watching the new Star Wars.
We got to find out what planet that Southern drawl, originates from, because like the British accent is considered like Coruscanti, I think is what they call it.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
it's probably like Vidalia. It's like V E D A L E A or something like that.
Savannah.
Yeah, yes.
Savannah.
Oh gosh. So do we really want to break this down like scene by scene, or do we want to get into the good stuff?
We've done every episode.
Well, I'll say, a quick thing about that, because I mean, Reva's story is big to us. So, we can't just ignore it. So she's looking for Owen, because we found out in the last episode, she knows now. She's going after, she wants to finish off, anything connected with Vader. I guess she put two and two together. Knows that Vader has a.
That's another plot hole. That's another one of those things you have to kind of.
It's one of those implied things you just have to, because she doesn't explicitly say, like, I want the boy. I know that he's the boy. Everything is implied that she figured it out. Just like she figured out, she knew about figuring out about Anakin and Vader or knew about it.
Yeah. Right. I think there needs to be, some backstory later on how some explanation in a book. Comic something how she figured that out. I don't think they would play that out in a live action series or even an animated series, because it's that seems like something that they would put in a comic or a novel or something along the way. But they really need to explain that to the hardcore Star Wars nerds.
Well, I think the most they probably do for that is probably just a short story how Reva figured out Luke was Anakin's.
Or, I mean, it doesn't even have to be a comic about her. She's just in it and she plays her part and, they show that she figures it out at some point.
Spoilers for later on, but maybe she meets Luke again later as an adult and she lets, you remember that time those scary Tuskens raided the farm? Yeah. And it didn't look like a Tusken was running after you. That was me.
That was me. But, I kind of got a feeling. I don't know. There's a rumor going around that Cameron Monaghan, is that how you say his name?
Monaghan
or whatever. Yeah. Is getting his own Disney Plus series with Star Wars Jedi. Hmm. And she might fit into that world
at some point. It's interesting. That leaves a lot of open air stuff that, question wise, okay, so what does that leave for the game? And, what story are they wanting to tell?
Yeah.
I guess that's the big thing.
Or I'm assuming would it after even take Survivor.
Place? Yeah.
Once they tell the story of Survivor, I'm sure, unless he dies in Survivor, which they're not going to do that.
Give him a clone.
But I could almost see them take it, if they're doing a show, it could be like set maybe post Return of the Jedi or something,
But then they'll have to age
maybe him even up 10 years after or something like that, huh?
I said, then they'll have to age him up though.
Yeah. I mean, I could see him aging him up, or at least just, you know, I could in some ways or something like that. But it's going to be weird if they were to try to balance a show and a game at the same time like that, when the game was the actual main draw.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind like seeing, you know, after we'd find out what happens in Survivor, you know, if he's okay or not, if he survives it, I wouldn't mind if he, like, say, kind of like Saw, you know, guest stars, you know, appears in other series that can fit in that timeline with him. And at least, you know, with Cameron at his current age, that he can pull off without having to act too old or too much younger, you know, in his age range, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Andor could be, you know, a possible one he could possibly pop up in. But I doubt it, because I don't think they're going to want to touch on Jedi.
Yeah, I just don't know when Andor takes place. Like, how far?
I think it's about 5 years before
Rogue One.
Events of Rogue One, I think.
So that puts it 5 years from Kenobi, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's possible. So to continue on, though, the next scene is back aboard the little
ship. I got PTSD flashbacks of The Last Jedi.
Last Jedi. I know it. And Vader's Star Destroyer's chasing them, shooting them, you know, trying to catch up with
them. But this was like the this was the better way of doing it. Like, Last Jedi was way, like, Last Jedi was not like a non-Star Warsy way of doing a chase, even with the way the lasers worked. This was a callback to how I would imagine, like, a Star Destroyer trying to rain fire on a fleeing ship. Because, I mean, if you could replace that ship with a Falcon, and it would have been awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of having to dodge fire.
Having all the flak and all that kind of stuff, the flak hits. That's what I really love, is those deflector hits and the flak hits, they call them. Like, if you read the old novels and stuff, I just love that. All the little flashes around the ships when they'd be, you know, dodging the turbo lasers. Mm-hmm. It's less classic Star Wars to me. Mm-hmm. So I really love that. And then you had Vader on the bridge. It was just like, you know, like, bring him to me. And the
Grand Inquisitor beside him.
Yeah, it was a really cool moment.
That was a cool dynamic between Vader and that Grand Inquisitor.
I'll get to it. Yeah, I was going to get to it in a moment when the big thing happens, which is he realized the only way to get everybody to safety is he has to play on Vader's obsession with him, which is what he does. You know, he leaves, you know, after saying it was a sad little goodbye with Leia too.
Yeah, it was.
Because for him, you know, he kind of treated it like he thought that this was going to be a one-way trip. You know, he thought, you know, he kind of seemed like, you know, there's a pretty good chance I could die down here, because I sure didn't do too well the last time I went up against.
But also, like, it was funny how he had to fight half the ship, because they were all like, no, you're not going anywhere.
Well, I like that too, because it was like, you know, because that whole group is about protecting the Jedi, you know?
Yeah.
So they see him and they're like, no, you know, we don't want, you know, I did like that.
We got to protect you. And he's like, no, I'm protecting you. And they're like, no, I'm protecting you.
I was going to say, there's that little quiet scene where Obi-Wan's by himself and he's talking to, we think, Qui-Gon. He says, Master, I've got to face him again. But that scene right there tells you what I've been thinking this whole time. He still cares for Anakin, especially now that he knows Anakin's alive. There's still that bond between them that he can't bring himself to kill Anakin, right? He knows this coming down, and that's why he's saying, Master, I'm, you know, this may be it. I may have to finish him off. And it's kind of heartbreaking to know that he still has this care for this dude who's done so much damage to his whole way of life. You know, he upended his life basically.
Especially after I bet he's like, I've got this second chance and I just don't, like, I really don't want to have to go through with it.
Oh yeah.
So
what were you saying, Ray? I'm sorry.
I was just adding on, you know, along with the people, you know, not wanting to leave. I really like, Haja, you know, Kumail Nanjiani's character. I've really liked how, you know, what he's really become. Yeah, he started out, you know, when he started out, he was just, you know, simply a con man. I do like that he's shown that he's more than that. Yeah. You know, he's a character.
He's at least a self-aware con man that's trying to be better. I like that. You know,
he's one character I definitely would not mind seeing more of in the future. I enjoyed him way more in Star Wars than I did with him in Eternals.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And I'm a huge Kumail fan, and I was disappointed with Eternals, but with this character, it was like it starts out with he's a cool cameo, and I didn't think he would go anywhere. And his arc, I really like his arc. Like you said, by the end of it, you're like, I want to see more of this dude. I want to see him in a show.
I could definitely, he.
I feel like his character was fleshed out a lot better than Ice Cube Jr.'s.
I think he was a lot better fleshed out than DJ.
That's true. That's 100%.
No, I just like 100%. That he's he's doing a con, but in the end, he's still doing it for he's doing a good thing, even though he's getting more money out of it than he needs to. You know, like he does, it seems like he was overcharging them or kind of swindling them out of more money than they would need to pay. But he is, his goal was always the same, as he is trying to protect people. You know, like for sensitive kids, he was still directing them to the path. It looked,
I feel like he also had a little bit of an ego. Like that he also had a little bit, he had an ego. So he also used the good deeds that he was doing to feed that ego and make himself look bigger and better. Yeah. You know, he just tried to project.
Just the con man of the force stuff, with the little magnet glove things and the,
for sure,
it's clicking the little clicker thing to open and shut the shutters. Kumail is great. Now, I love how he was a mediator between Leia and Obi-Wan things got, because she was obviously upset that he was, going to possibly get himself killed. And, no, I don't want to get to that part yet, but I did like the little thing that he gave her. That's kind of her start of rebellion. He gave her Tala's holster.
That was Tala's. That's what I thought, but okay.
Yeah. So
her holster.
And the little exchange was like, there's no blaster in it. I'm not giving you a blaster. You're 10 years old.
You have to grow one.
When you kill a man, you can take it from his cold, dead hands, okay?
And you stick it in that holster.
and then there's some foreshadowing there, too. I think we're going to see, what's his name? Kumail. I think we're going to see him again, as well as Roken.
Right. Because Roken seems like a character that's going to definitely come back in some capacity.
Yeah, because, I mean, Obi-Wan went out of his way to say, you're a leader. There's not many leaders around,
Yeah.
Continue to be a leader. Yeah. Okay. You mean like in Andor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also the path seems like it's a big new piece of mythos too. So like the timeline and the lore of this whole underground network, specifically trying to help the Jedi escape the Purge, which is really interesting. So I dig that whole aspect.
Yeah, I want more of that for sure. Yeah. I want to learn more about that.
Could this be part of Cal Kestis's?
That'd be interesting if the path connects into Survivor, if it's brought up at least, if it's shown. That would be interesting.
Well, I mean, the rumor is he's getting his own show. So,
that,
that could play a part in it. I don't
possible.
Know.
And then next was, he obviously takes the ship, the little backup ship. Mm-hmm. And he diverts away. And I love the exchange between the Grand Inquisitor and Vader. Because, the Grand Inquisitor's like, we could take the whole network down right now. Don't worry about one Jedi. And Kenobi, and Vader's like, I want to kill Obi-Wan Kenobi. But the best thing about it was,
don't screw this up for me.
The best thing about it was, not one peep of dissent after that. He was just like,
okay.
Commander. It was just an idea.
He knows the Grand Inquisitor knows his place, and it's not to complain.
I was just surprised that he gave just a little bit of, sassiness to Vader when he says, we're sacred. We need to go after and destroy this network. And I'm like,
I think he was playing on Palpatine also, because Palpatine kind of, you know, at the very end, spoiler, he kind of had the same sentiment as the Grand Inquisitor, which was, why don't focus on these little things when we have this big thing? Yeah. Which is kind of, it's almost like he was echoing that sentiment, and that does come back.
Mm-hmm.
It but, does. You know, they end up going after Obi-Wan, and then Vader decides to go land on the planet and take him on, and then we get
probably, by himself.
Yeah, by himself. And then it begins like one of my, I would say it's probably one of my favorite lightsaber duels now.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like we finally get a memorable choreographed Star Wars duel. Like this was something like we didn't really get in the sequel trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, oh God, this was a great fight.
Even more so is, you know, because I couldn't say it yesterday or when after I watched it Wednesday, because I didn't want to accidentally spoil anything for you, Austin. But because I know you, when did you finally get to watch it? Was it Wednesday night?
What, this latest episode?
Yeah,
it was last night.
Okay. Yeah,
after work.
But one thing I loved was it was almost like a mix of how the fights worked. Like technically and story wise, it was almost like a mix of the original trilogy and the prequels.
It was still the callback to like the Empire way of fighting.
Well, also it was almost like it had, especially in Return of the Jedi, there was a big emotional weight to the fight. Also,
right? They were. I just say Empire because I just feel like that fight was longer, drawn out, and really emotional, where you're just that like was, sweaty and you know
that was a it's struggle not all about to survive like
flipping and.
Yeah. And also, you know, under the pretense that he thought, you know, I'm going to kill the man that killed my father. You know,
right.
And then Return of the Jedi was like, I'm fighting my dad. I'm trying not to kill him, but man, right. Is he making me angry.
Yeah. But I want to open up a can on this man.
He went sister. I got so mad.
Yeah. Yeah. You can attack me, but don't you attack my sister.
Oh, here comes the Southern Jedi again.
I don't know why. We want Southern Jedi. No, I agree. The fight was memorable, and like you said, it had the emotional weight, and I love the callbacks to the prequel trilogy the positions and stuff, like especially, I don't know if y'all caught this, but did you see the episode one move where Obi, you know, did the backwards block?
Oh yeah.
There was a lot of
prequel trilogy moves in there,
right? That's what I'm saying. But it just I loved how the way they choreographed it. It was like everything was it was functional, you know, like it was how it really should be in like kind of real combat a little bit. Like it would just, you know, but at the same time in the flashiness, it was like the way they choreographed it, they would sprinkle in those exact prequel moves, like these moves that Obi and Anakin had performed on each other in the past or in that training montage, or you get like throwbacks to the movies, like the Maul, you know, the back and forward blocks, you know, with Maul, he kind of did a variation of that, and it was like, oh my God. And not only that, obviously you get I was like, I bet Rey drooled at this, but you get the, was it Ataru? Was that the name of it? Form, was it four? Which, what's the form that Obi-Wan is known for? And that's his pose he does. I think, you know?
No, it's not Ataru because that is,
that's Yoda's, not Ataru. Okay.
I think it's Makashi or Shinsho. I think either Makashi or Shinsho.
Let me see. I know
Juyo is like the original form of a pod,
but I love
a modification of Juyo.
Yeah. See, throughout his career, he used form three Sorisu.
Sorisu. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorisu.
But also if you noticed, he, especially when he started to really turn the tide on the fight, he transitioned to Anakin style a little bit. You saw some of Anakin's aggressive moves, almost like he was, you know, he did the backward spinning stuff.
Oh yeah, yep. Yeah. And if you notice at the beginning of the fight, Vader still thought, this is a defeated Obi-Wan that I'm facing.
Yeah,
right.
This is form three, by the way.
Yeah. I'm one-handing my attacks at everything because I'm Vader and I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he starts seeing how, okay, this is not the same Obi-Wan. He starts using two hands as well. I mean, because he's realizing he's fighting for his life.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, which is kind of cool. I mean, which little things like that, kind of cool. And then he gets to the point where, the tide kind of turns and he uses the Force to smash open the ground and Obi-Wan falls down into this just big crater. And he proceeds to pummel him with big, you know, stones with the Force. And he's standing on top of the crater with Obi-Wan down there. And I swear, I was just waiting for him to say, who has the high ground now? You know, I was too. But that didn't happen. It didn't happen.
I was kind of relieved that it didn't happen. I mean, he did kind of do the master thing. He taunted him.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He did. And then the fight came back. You know, Obi-Wan starts hearing voices.
Oh, yeah. I like the symbolism in that, too, because it started out everything from his past, all his failures, everything that was haunting him. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that was kind of not helping. That was just, you know, and then he started to remember, you know, I think it's also brought up at some point in the show was, you know, think about what is, not what was,
mm-hmm.
you know, and also in this, you know, the future, not just the past, you know, think about mm-hmm. what's ahead. And he, you know, sees Luke and Leia, you know, kind of the hope of the whole story for him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what kind of gives him that renewed strength is, you know, letting go of those ghosts of those demons that have haunted him for so long.
And then he proceeds to force push the rocks out of the way and hop right out of the pit and chasing Vader down.
Hey,
and then
I didn't hear no bell.
Yeah, I didn't hear no bell.
No, I will say one more before we go forward. another parallel is I love the, you know, you have Vader at the top of the hole. It's sort of like symbolic of Maul being at the top of the hole, looking down at Obi in episode one, sort of like a reflection again. You know what I mean? Like an endlessly
circle.
It's like a hopeless situation where it's not only a throwback to the high ground that is always like part of Obi-Wan's life, but it's just that, I don't know. It's the symbolism. I really love when we get those callbacks, because it's like Lucas's version of the poetry, you know,
mm-hmm.
where you get, you know, the same beats in the movies. I just
love, oh yeah, the ring, the ring theory.
Yeah.
Can y'all see?
I think
pictures?
It's called Ring.
Or
yeah.
See this,
yeah. Picture? Yeah. I pulled it up. Yeah.
Once your feels showing up, I have to actually look at it and show it. Yeah. Here's
a T90 picture.
That was a what picture? That?
It's very small.
Oh, it's not showing up very well.
Well, that one's just—it was like a distant kind of pic.
Oh, this is the big pan shot of them at the beginning of the fight,
which mm-hmm. was fantastic. Oh my god, I loved it. It's like, you know, taking all the greatness from, it was like those great ideas from Last Jedi with that final fight.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also screams, actually throughout this whole episode, screams Ralph McQuarrie.
Yeah.
All these shots are so Ralph McQuarrie. There's especially this. This right here just screams Ralph McQuarrie.
Yeah, this one where I think it's one right after one of the Reva scenes that we'll also get to, but when it comes back from it, it's just this cool little sweeping shot of the environment and it goes right into, you know, where they're fighting. Mm-hmm. Love that. Such, well, another thing, because I told y'all earlier before we did the show that I was going back and watching some of the other movies, especially mainly I watched episode 3, the big fight between Obi-Wan and Anakin. And one thing I noticed about how George directs and compared with this one is he doesn't ever get too complex with his directing style, with his camera work. He keeps it extremely simple. You know, he there's not a whole lot of dynamic movement, very minimal movement. And that's what's, I thought that was in, you know, this was a very big contrast to that, because there was a whole lot of camera movement, but also a lot of great angles too that were really unique. Like I remember a couple overhead shots that were really cool. And yeah, another big thing, you know, has to do with how this was just filmed and the technology they can use now is how much the lighting really went into, like, the saber lighting went into how it was filmed. Like, so much of the lighting was really
from the sabers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean,
it's great that they can do that now. It's great that they've come up with a way. I mean, I'm sure they'll be able to perfect it and make it better as time goes on, but they're doing a good job of incorporating these new lightsaber techniques into the films. Yeah. I mean, I guess it started with Force Awakens.
Well, I think you said like the first time was almost like a prototype of that process was Attack of the Clones with the little dark little fight in the dark between Dooku and Anakin.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about, like, yeah, whenever it looked like they, I mean, their movements were so fluid. It was all, like, there was probably a power, it was a, you know, like a wire or something.
Everything was very up close, yeah. It was like,
so they're holding fluorescent bulbs.
Yeah, it was almost like just close-ups on their face, and you just see the lighting of the sabers around them. You didn't really see the sabers a whole lot.
Right, exactly. And now they can get that effect wholeheartedly just with, I mean,
yeah, just like this shot. I love this. Like, just the color contrast, you can actually see it reflecting off of everybody. And I looked for that also when I was watching the Anakin and Obi-Wan fight in Revenge of the Sith. And there were maybe a few select moments where it looked like George made the conscious effort to try to have some kind of lighting to make it look like, you know, the light is naturally coming off the sabers. And the only two times I think I remember directly was, it was between Obi-Wan and Anakin when they're fighting on top of that big long table. And I think he was trying to force the saber down, like, onto Obi-Wan's face. And you can see the lighting on him. Like, you can see the blue light a little bit. But other than that, when you really watch it, you don't see the blue light reflection, you know, as an actual light source. Yeah. So I love that they've really taken advantage of the fact that these are weapons that are also a source of light.
Yeah. Now is this scene prior to, no, this is before. Yeah.
No, this is when he puts him into the ground. Yeah. And now, and then this is when he's back up and he's fighting and he's a lot more aggressive than he was before.
Yeah. And so he's fixing to actually force push Vader against a rock.
Yeah.
I think
the first time he does it twice, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Right there.
Yeah.
And then the next scene is when Obi-Wan really shows out.
Yeah.
Yeah, right there. And you know, like, Obi-Wan is officially back.
Yeah.
You know, because he's doing stuff we've never seen Obi-Wan do before.
Yeah.
And it's so great that Vader's like, let me take some notes here. When I fight my son, I think I'm just going to do this instead of you know, lightsabering him to death.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's like, he's just saying, no, I'm going to take this out on your son, on my son. He's just like, all right, you beat me. I'm going to do this to him.
Well, you know, one thing I loved about this was this fight does something we haven't really seen it since maybe Return of the Jedi, where, you know, at least in live action, because I would say a lot of the animated stuff make use of doing really cool big moments like this, to where, like, the Jedi's using more than just their sabers and force pushes. He's actually, or more than just their sabers, you know, a lot of stuff, a lot of times, you know, it's mainly just about the lightsaber choreography.
Yeah.
Other force powers rarely come into effect in a lot of the fights that we see in live action. So it's really cool to see them really going all out to show the potential that you can have with these two kind of characters, like how much power can go into it. So you finally get to see something like, he's not just raising the rocks up, he hammers Vader with all of them.
Pummels him.
Right.
And I love that also, if you think about it, all through, you know, throughout these 19 years, I think this is the first time we've seen in, like, either live action or animation, someone who's actually, like, takes him on. You know, Ahsoka was close, but she, you know, she barely survived. But Obi-Wan's actually putting up a fight that Vader really can't handle.
Right. Well, it really needs to, and I really like that they do that, because it really needs to enforce the fact that Obi-Wan,
was the only one who was equal.
More powerful than Darth Vader. It is not a question. It is a fact. And it's like he's always, in the end, been in control. You get what I mean? Like, it's just, So it's,
I don't know, though, man. I kind of got to disagree. I don't know that he's more powerful than Anakin or Darth Vader.
I don't know. I mean, well, it's always say, like, it's like saying, is Yoda more powerful than Anakin? It's like, of course he is, but
okay, raw power, probably Anakin wins, but I'd say you're also right in the fact that Obi-Wan has advantages that no one else has. He knows weaknesses about Anakin that no one else
has. Of course, the fact that he's a Jedi Master, all of that comes into play, and that immediately he beats him. That's why I'm like, Obi-Wan will always, you know, at a certain point, I mean, it's just, he's just a better Jedi, you know, I guess that's the way of saying it. He's just a better Jedi or a better warrior than Anakin.
But as far as force potential, I think Anakin
potential,
I would even say he might even. I think the way that Lucas wrote that thing, Anakin is the most powerful dude. Mm-hmm. I mean, but he's more powerful than Yoda. He's more powerful than the Emperor.
They play
him, though. The Emperor plays him.
It begs for a what if, like Infinity. I would love if the Infinity lines came back, because I would love to see a what if storyline of what if Qui-Gon hadn't died. And I'd love to see how that would play out. Like, because I could imagine, like, the political intrigue of Palpatine trying to figure out a way to manipulate Anakin. But while Qui-Gon is there, Qui-Gon's probably going to be on, you know, we'll probably figure out what's going on pretty quick. You know, and he would be much, you know, he would have been a better teacher for Anakin, you know, help him work out his, you know, work out the emotions of, you know, being a kid and then dealing with all this stuff you're having to deal with that a lot of Jedi didn't have to do, because they were, you know, basically from birth, they were, you know, raised into that lifestyle.
And you got to wonder what makes Qui-Gon so special, what made him, like, think outside the box and just was able to understand an aspect of the Force that other Jedi just sort of didn't want to understand or couldn't.
Yeah.
I always assumed that his connection to Dooku played a big role in that, where
he was like a Dooku. It's almost like they were almost like mirrors, where Dooku was the fault, you know, was what Qui-Gon would have been if he'd gone bad.
Right. So Qui-Gon was able to kind of have that as a soundboard, as a way to go, or a mirror to go, okay, I can't go that far. I can't be a dark. I can't be a Sith.
But he understands.
He understands the whole picture and kind of empathizes with everything and knows and just kind of understands what's going on. Or has the potential. I think Qui-Gon was just able, I think because of those types of connections, it opened his mind up more, I guess. That's the only way I could think about it. But then again, it's just kind of weird, because Dooku was supposed to have been trained by Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like we're going to be seeing some of that in the Tales of the Jedi on Disney.
Oh, yeah, because they did show pictures of a young Dooku, didn't they?
Yeah.
Would that mean that Dooku was actually Yoda, so as Yoda's Padawan?
Yep.
Well, that's something I'm really interested to see, because we've never seen, I don't think that's really come up in the mythos much, you know, of actual Padawans he's taken on. Like, did he stop taking Padawans on after what happened with Dooku? Maybe. Like,
well, we don't know what happened with Dooku too, so maybe some of that's going to get explained in Tales of the Jedi.
Well, as far as we know, I'm trying not to get too off track, but as far as we know, you know, it sounded in Attack of the Clones like he didn't part on bad terms. It was just mutual disagreements philosophically. So it sounds like they weren't on bad terms until they found out, oh, wait, he's a bad guy. He's trying to kill us. No, shame on you.
Now, this picture you got up right here, it took me a while to understand what was going on, but he's actually
beating his, he's with the hitting hilt his, of the... Yeah, hit, hitting lightsaber. It against his chest plate. Yeah, hit against his little
breathing box, or whatever that control is.
Some kind of life support.
Yeah,
and terribly exposed thing.
Yeah.
But I love that. But I love that he utilized that. Like, it's such an obvious weakness. Like, of course, if I can manipulate this fight enough, I'm going to bust this dude's chest piece. Yeah. I'm going to freak up his breathing apparatus. He can't breathe.
Yeah. To me though, it also goes back to reinforce the idea that he doesn't want to kill Anakin.
No, he's trying to disable him.
Because he could have turned the lightsaber around and it'd be over, game over. But he didn't.
Yeah.
You know.
This is right after he slashed him across the back.
Yeah. Again, not a killing blow, just a.
Yeah. But actually, it keeps boggling me over and over, like during this fight, how, you know, watching him take him on in a capacity where no one else throughout Vader's reign, you know, has been able to put him, you know, in that. I think other than maybe Palpatine or Tarkin, I don't think any of the Jedi has put this much of a hurt on Vader.
No. And in any story that I've read or seen, yeah, no.
Cal sure didn't get a chat.
Yeah. And then, of course, we get some dialogue here that I think.
This wasn't it, though. This was right before the big moment, which was he had backed up.
Oh, yeah, they backed up, yeah.
And this great little, I love this little, it was a little wireworky looking, but yeah. I can see why they did it, though, because you get this great little visual. I'm sure, you know, once there's some good high-def pictures, this looks like something that would be concept art. This picture of him just leaping forward at him in a diving attack.
Yeah.
And does the slash. Right across his helmet.
That was so great.
So apparently this is supposed to be what causes him to have the scarring on his head. In Return of the Jedi, apparently.
People are saying, yeah.
Yeah, because it's the same little area.
Yeah.
And also, if you think about it, it's actually that's a little part
of the beginning.
Yeah.
Beginning of the fight.
But so he sees Anakin.
Yeah. And this, I didn't know that I needed this, but I did need this to piece together. For me, there was always this missing. I could never in my mind say that Anakin was truly Darth Vader because the difference in the voice, you know, I mean, from the end of the Revenge of the Sith to A New Hope, in my head, it's just like they're two different people.
Yeah. Right. You know, no, I see what you're talking about. This is the final. And this is finally a way for us to get our link our brains to where and to make it make sense the way that I guess the way it functions. And I love how it was cutting in and out too.
Yeah,
like it was sometimes work and then sometimes wouldn't. Yeah.
Favorite part of the whole.
We did get a moment. Man. Well, if you think about it, we did get a moment similar to this in Rebels also with Ahsoka.
Right.
Ahsoka managed to. Which is funny. She actually clipped the opposite head of his side of his head. She only did like a small gash where I think you can only see like his eye and his cheek.
Yeah.
But it did mess with the modulator, I think, a little bit, so you could hear like a mix of the voice actor who played him, Matt Lanter, and then the regular Vader voice, which I think in Rebels it was James Earl Jones again.
It was. Yeah. It was. But it's not live action.
No, it's not live action. That's all I was going to say was,
I mean,
we got a taste of it, but this is the first real blend.
And I didn't know I was really needing that, but I can finally say that Hayden Christensen and Anakin Skywalker, yes, I can see the transformation, even though, you know, at the end of the Revenge of the Sith, the mask comes down and that's supposed to represent him being Darth, you know, oh, there's the change. It didn't really do it for me because I couldn't see that guy in that suit. Yeah. Now I can.
Yeah.
Now it's perfect.
Well, you didn't notice the angry, smushed burn face watching as the mask comes down?
Hey, and you know what else, too? It almost makes up, you know, a lot of the talk about the prequels is, his acting was so wooden, Hayden Christensen. But if you listen to his dialogue now, it sounds like freaking Vader.
Well, what I was going to say,
I mean,
I was going to add on to that was this scene, and I went back and watched some of the prequel stuff, like some of the scenes, and you know, you always hear that about George and how he directed the prequels, you know, he didn't really try to pull the most emotional weight from his actors that he could in a lot of scenes. It was more about just, you know, what was the joke always? You know, faster, more intense.
Yeah, faster, more intense.
But I love the nuance just in this exchange between them, because you in these close-ups that you got. And, you know, I went back and watched some of the scenes, like, you know, Obi-Wan finding out about Anakin. You know, it seemed like there could have been so much more Ewan could have delivered in some of those scenes. But sometimes it really came off kind of stiff and stilted, almost like there wasn't a whole lot of direction that he was given to go on in terms of, like, you know, emotion. Mm-hmm. But the nuance here in this sequence, just between both of them, and just delivery and just small little, like this part right here, which was when I think he said, I think Anakin says the line, you know, I am not Anakin. I am what remains.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this look from Hayden. Where is it? This. It's all just kind of this, you know, you see him start to tear up immediately, right?
Yeah.
It's like, he's really gone, you know, and what have I, well, this is what I've done. He still blames himself at this point.
I was going to say, I bet a lot of people, when I was watching this, this is my thought on this. I bet there's a lot of people that complained that this was redundant and just felt like a retread of Revenge of the Sith.
No.
At the end of it. But no. I was going to say, but what I feel is it's almost, I hate to say that it's a do-over, but I felt like it's a proper way of Obi-Wan coming to terms with Anakin becoming Vader, because back then it's more like he's dealing with a spoiled brat that just finally he's had enough of it, you know, because even when Anakin's on the ground, he's like, I hate you. He's just like a little brat, you know. Mm-hmm. But now Obi-Wan really has to come to terms and face this monster that that rose from his former student, you know. It's like, wow, you truly are gone. You know, and the way what he says to him too is so chilling.
But well, to follow it up at, you know, well, first off, after he told him, you know, I'm what remains, he does this thing he never said. And I think I think the closest he came was saying, you know, I have failed you. He admitted that in Revenge of Sith, but his delivery got to be so much better here. Was I'm sorry, Anakin.
I'm truly sorry.
Of it. And for all of it, that was like the kicker for me, was just like, he's just taking responsibility for everything then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it made me think about Shmi Skywalker saying goodbye to Anakin in episode one. And from then on, I'm like, God, like Obi-Wan took all of that weight.
Yeah.
And it was Qui-Gon really that did that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Qui-Gon set that in motion, but it was like Obi-Wan totally took that weight and it's heavy.
Yeah. And then the response from Anakin, I've seen people say it with almost both ways of like how he interpreted it. And I almost came off with it like almost a mix of it. But it, you know, what he says to him is, you know, I am not your failure. You didn't kill Anakin Skywalker. I did. And also that ending, which I'll get to, you know, is interesting. But because some people said, you know, it's almost like that last shred, you know, in defense of him or seeing the good side of him. They're saying, you know, it's that last shred of humanity from Anakin kind of reaching out and kind of absolving Obi-Wan's like, I did this to myself, you know. No matter what happened, this was still my choice.
I think that was the last, I felt like that was the last straw, like the last bit of weight, I guess, off of Obi-Wan was him having to at least hear that from Anakin.
And,
it was an evil, like creepy way of it coming off. But like Anakin, Anakin did him a favor. He's like, at least brought Obi-Wan peace. It was like,
I mean, if you notice, if you kind of really look, because it's almost not noticeable if you're not really paying attention to it, but you can see Hayden almost kind of smile when he says, I did, when he admits, like, you didn't kill Anakin Skywalker, I did. You can kind of see a little, you know, a little smile up here, like he's almost like taunting him about it.
Yeah.
And then
but he's in no position to fight anymore, obviously.
But what I loved, when I was talking earlier about the lighting and how it was utilized throughout this whole sequence, this was the most beautiful symbolic part of it, was during this quiet moment, you saw kind of at the beginning of it, when we first saw Vader, he was still a little tinted in red. And then there was this tint of blue that came in from Obi-Wan's lightsaber. And then after he admitted, you know, I killed Anakin, the red just engulfs the blue.
Yeah.
I loved that. That was so great in terms of just art direction for the camera and cinematography. So well done. I loved that.
The grin, if you look, like you were saying, like those two shots, the lighter and then the blue, like the way he's grinning is great, because now it's like I've kind of imagined how, like I've imagined that sort of look when Vader would speak certain lines, like in the old trilogy, like when he, like two of them in particular is like the I am your father. But then when he's like, sister, you know, so you have a twin sister. Like he just has like a seriously twisted look inside that mask, because you never see a face. It's always just a faceless kind of or expressionless thing, you know. And now to see that glimmer in his eye, like he is evil. I mean, he really. I don't know. I just felt like they did such a great job of bringing that home.
I mean, he just snapping kids' necks left and right. So,
stabbing kids.
Daddy no more. Yeah.
But I mean, Obi-Wan finally realizes this. He's done. He's no longer Anakin Skywalker. Yeah. So he says goodbye, Darth.
Yeah. And that kind of falls into the, you know, people thing. I think I've seen articles where people talk about that. It's like, well, Darth's a title. Why is Obi-Wan saying it now? Because it was, you know, it was retconned. You know, I think was it with Episode One that they started to use Darth as a Sith title?
I think so. Yeah,
I think that's when that officially became part of the canon. And you know, and then Palpatine got the Darth Sidious title in Episode One, and Darth Maul. So, you know, originally in A New Hope, Darth was just his name, his first name. And then it went, but I like, it's almost like it evolved into, he's saying it out of almost like a disrespect to this, you know, the whole Sith thing.
But also acknowledging that Anakin's no longer around.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when you see him again in A New Hope, he doesn't even say Anakin. He just calls him Darth.
Darth. And it's almost like he's taunting him too. He's like,
I always look at it as a taunt.
Yeah.
Because it's like, hey, don't you like your new title you've earned, Darth?
Darth.
And it's like, oh, and I was going to say one more connection I love with the original trilogy is now that Anakin tells Obi-Wan that, you know, I killed him. Like I killed Anakin.
Yeah.
It's sort of, it makes sense now that Obi-Wan would then could use that and say, hey, Luke, like when he's talking to Luke, like, yeah, Darth Vader betrayed and murdered your father. You know what I mean? Like I sort of told you the truth. He did kill him.
From a certain point of view.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
But I did like something that could have been so ham-fisted in how it was handled. I do like how nuanced and very emotional and heartfelt it was in earnest in trying to deal with this emotional baggage between these two characters, and I liked how they did that instead of it just being a simple thing of like, well, we got to close up this little hole of him saying, you know, I Darth Vader killed your father. It's almost like this is the tortured, torn soul of Anakin Skywalker. You know, he's got this evil kind of overpowering, intoxicated by the dark side, you know, just kind of engulfed the good man that he used to be.
And like I said, this was the first tear dropper here.
Yeah.
This scene, me and the wife both were like tearing up, like, oh, it's so sad. But now let's move on, because this is pretty much it for Obi-Wan and Darth Vader for the episode.
Well, I do like that Vader was screaming after him still.
Oh, yeah.
Kenobi. He was screaming Obi-Wan. He's not Maul.
Yeah, that's right.
That's for Maul to scream.
Not Maul. Yeah. He's.
So they both needed to meet at some point, but they didn't. So that, you know, Vader could start it and then Maul could finish it. Yeah. So we're back at.
Yeah. We're back on Tatooine now. And for Reva's, to finish up Reva's story here, because she's pretty much on the lookout for Luke, and one of the townsfolk, you know,
they went to Owen and said, hey,
got something to tell you here. So he goes back and we get our first look at Aunt Beru, who was played by the same
actress,
actress that played it in Revenge of the Sith, played her, and Attack of the Clones. And they go to planning on how to fortify the their little
And I really homestead. I really like this whole sequence. I really like this whole sequence with them kind of holding off.
Yeah.
It gave me, I don't know if y'all got this, but this one really made the Larses feel kind of like the Kents to me.
Yep. A little bit.
It was like a mixture of the Kents on the Wild West frontier. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like they really have to, because that's what the Wild, you know, you had people that was going to take you, try to take your home or whatever, you know, you had to fight for it. And so I like how they had the secret compartment with the guns, the shotguns and stuff. I'm like, yeah, you got to fight for that moisture.
But well, I mean, I mentioned the Kents in that, like, also like that. But one reason why I was thinking of them as the Kents was this was the first time we really got fleshed out of how much they really do care about Luke.
They're adoptive guardians. Yeah.
Because you could almost kind of play it off in A New Hope if you wanted to, is that Luke's just, he just lives with them and does his chores. This one, you really see that they really do love the boy.
He's going to stay here. He's got to do work.
Yeah. Well, I love what, you know, Reva, you know, finally shows up. She's attacking them. And she says to Owen, like, you know,
you really do love him.
You really do love him. Like he's your own son or something, or like he's your own. And Owen just, you know, he says to him, he is my own. It kind of gave me an echo of kind of Jonathan from Man of Steel, the whole, you know, can I just keep pretending I'm your son? It's like, you are my son. So I did like that fleshing out that they got to do with the Larses and how much they really, you know, put themselves a risk to keep him safe.
Yeah. And you know, I was worried this was going to break canon again by having Luke see a lightsaber, but I don't think there was ever Luke's eyeballs going to a lightsaber because he was up through the hatch before
when she came out, I think when she chased it, when she came out of that porthole that he went through, I think she had her saber off of that. Turned it back off.
And when he fell down
the rock,
he was unconscious when she lit the lightsaber. So he still hadn't seen a lightsaber.
Yeah. Luke's going to have brain damage when he's older and he didn't realize it. That's like,
I have to go to Tosche Station.
He forgot how to be a hero.
Uncle Owen, Tosche Station.
It all works out.
but you know, that is, I mean, it does fit the character though, like pre-Luke becoming a Jedi, maybe that's his thing, is he's just a klutz kid. He can't, like, he's not a tough kid. You know what I mean? Like, he could probably, he's a really, really good pilot, but he probably, you know, gets beat up or falls off things. Like, you know, and here he fell and got knocked out, you know, in A New Hope.
Did she knock him down, though?
I'm just saying he's, it just seems like he's more prone to just getting knocked out and he's out of action. And it's sort of like that at the beginning of A New Hope. Remember, it's like you get the Tusken Raider pops up. It's like, and it like kind of just knocks him out. And he didn't really get to do much of anything, you know?
Yeah.
And it's Speaking of which,
I don't appreciate how Uncle Owen accused the Tusken Raiders of, you know, he like threw the Tusken Raiders under the bus and said, they're about to come raid us, Luke.
Yeah, that's pretty true.
Like he's telling him, like, those Indians are going to come take our land from us.
They were like, how about you keep our names out your mouth? We don't want nothing to do with your little farm.
But I do love that moment where, you know, we really see, you know, Reva sees flashes of what happened to her.
Yeah.
You know, and she's finally seeing the consequences of what she's becoming. And what she's turning into Vader. And I like that reflection. She sees herself on the ground where Luke is, I think, doesn't she?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and then, we don't see what happened.
Anakin stabbing her.
Yeah.
And Vader stabbing her.
Yeah. And then and then we cut back. We don't know what happened. I mean, we obviously know what happened, but we'll know exactly how it played out.
Yeah.
So, you know, Obi-Wan senses something's wrong, zips back to Tatooine as fast as he can. He don't even care what the Larses think anymore. He lands like 5 feet from their
home. Land by your house.
And then while, you know, they're about to try to find Luke, and then all of a sudden, here comes Reva doing the kind of carry that Luke had to do with, or that Anakin had to do with Shmi in episode two, you know, carrying him back to the homestead. And I think Owen and Baruch are worried that he's dead.
Yeah.
And then he starts to move, and then they're obviously, you know, relieved, and they take him away. And I love the exchange between Obi-Wan and Reva, where I would say this was her greatest piece of acting throughout the entire series. Yes, she knocked it out of the water. Moses Ingram, but you know, she couldn't do it because, you know, and then she was worried that she was him, you know, she's become him, and he Obi-Wan comforted her, you know, he did the Jedi thing, you know, showing her mercy and, you know, giving her peace with herself over what happened to her. You know, what did he say to her? You know, you chose not to do it. You know, you chose mercy. You, by doing that, you're honoring all those you lost.
Yeah, and kind of giving her last Jedi lesson.
Yeah,
so to speak, too. You know.
Yeah. So, you know, she had to learn to forgive herself too for what happened, which you know she. So. I love that. It's almost like a clean slate for her, or not clean slate, but a new chapter for her.
Yeah. I just hope Owen goes out there and gets that lightsaber off the ground so Luke doesn't find it.
Apparently, like, Jedi are just burying lightsabers all over Tatooine. So, you know, it's not like it's going to be hard for
it. Just go out in the dirt and find it. All right. So we're running.
When I see this little broken pipe over here, what is this? Oh,
so we're running kind of long here, and there's three more things we really need to hit.
Short
here. So just pretty much the ending of the show of this episode and the series. Kind of Kenobi comes back to Alderaan, you know, because Leia actually snuck Lola in Obi-Wan's pocket.
He decided when bring he it left. Back to her.
Yeah, so he has to bring this back to her, and of course. Leia's all dressing up with her holster and, you know, walking out there to meet him. And you can see that that's the beginning of her rebel leadership, you know.
But,
which was amazing. I love that.
What did y'all like her? What Obi-Wan kind of bestowed on her? Her, you know, who she is, you know, because she had asked about it, but her parents, she knows that.
Oh, he knows second her parents. Cry.
That was a brilliant little scene. Was
yeah,
he laid out for her how she was the best of both of her parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was what compassionate, kind, and fearless like her mother, or something like that. And then, and then passionate.
Yeah,
you know, basically, yeah, the best of Anakin and Padme. I love that moment. That was such a great little moment between them.
Tears again on that. And that one,
yeah,
great. And then they kind of
back to Tatooine.
You know, I still don't agree totally with this, but they, you know, said don't tell anybody that you know me, you know.
Because he kind of just says like
break canon.
Well, I think he just says kind of, you know, what is it? You know, just kind of it can put us both in danger if anyone finds out that you know about me, which it would. You know, if she found, you know, if anybody finds out that Leia knows the whereabouts of Obi-Wan Kenobi, she would definitely be in a lot of danger.
Yeah. So, okay. So you kind of keep canon okay for there. Then the next thing we do is we go see Obi-Wan pack up his cave.
Oh, yeah.
Pack up his cave and ride out to the Lars homestead one more time.
Which was a good little symbolism of him, you know, turning, you know, new chapter for him as well.
Yeah.
You know, that old, you know, the depression, the deep, dark place he was kind of in for a long time. He's past it now. So he can, you know, he's leaving that cave of loneliness.
And I think he had on his robes that he has as Sir Alec Guinness in A New Hope. The dark undershirt and the.
He did it first. He did right then. And then he put on he switched over and put on like something else.
The thing he wore when he was riding the,
over it.
I loved what he rode. You know, what he wore when he was riding the Yopi to the Lars homestead. I love that. That would make for a great Black Series figure.
Yeah.
The white and then like the little, the goggles.
It was very reminiscent of the Sideshow Mythos Obi-Wan Kenobi statue.
Because
it looked very, very similar. I think that's probably where they pulled it from. That
Easter egg. Yeah, it's probably a reference. I always thought that was a reference to that.
Yeah.
Well, there was also like a comp. comic from like 2015. Someone put a cover up and said like it's very similar to that, and it is kind of similar. It is very similar, not exactly identical, but very similar.
But long story short on this, you know, Owen says, "I thought you weren't coming back. You know, I thought I told you not to come back." Or anyway, he does, and then Owen initiates the, "Do you want to meet him?"
Yeah,
and then I like he how goes that was handled. And then he goes over there. Hello there.
And he gives him the, well, I mean, we don't see it, but, you know, it's implied that he gives him the T-14 toy. Yeah, he has in his hand. I do love Joel Edgerton's delivery of that. Just like, you know, all he's done for us, he deserves to at least get to meet this kid, you know.
Yeah. But dude, I love Joel Edgerton's whole performance throughout this whole series.
Yeah.
He's done a great job. That gruff voice, man, too. I mean, it's just awesome.
But it still almost feels like a missed opportunity to have him kind of be restricted to being Owen Lars. Because, man, he, imagine him being like a, you know, a smuggler character or some kind of Jedi. That would be so cool. But we get the other big thing when he's leaving. Finally, the thing we've been wondering. Qui-Gon.
The whole episode. Yep. And this.
It's Liam Neeson.
Cry number three right there.
Now look, he had the bubbly demeanor. God. When he first spoke, he had the bubbly demeanor of like his character from Love Actually. Well, it took you long enough. I immediately thought of that before I thought of episode one. I was like, it's Daniel from Love Actually.
Oh no, dude, that was perfect. A perfect way to end it, you know.
Oh man.
Just reaffirming that Obi-Wan is back.
Yeah.
You know, he's recovered from this whole trauma.
He's let go of his what's been haunting him for 10 years. He's been dealing with that.
Yeah.
But I love how simple it was too between them, because I know some people were probably wanting to be like complicated, but it's just, you know, it took you long enough. We got a long way ahead of us.
Yeah. Let's go.
The symbolism of it.
God, man. Qui-Gon was back, y'all. I mean, he was Qui-Gon, you know.
He didn't look a day different either.
No.
Neeson don't crack.
It just made me go like, yeah, we can get a Qui-Gon show. We could do that. We could get a Qui-Gon show going. I don't know how they'll handle Obi-Wan. They'll probably have to get a body double and then
I have heard, you know, that Ewan would love to do more. And I know Deborah Chow has said, like, you know, from the beginning, though, this has only been planned as a one thing. So, I mean, are there any quick, like, if there were to be a second season, is there a quick thing, like, any quick ideas you could think of that would make sense for a second season?
I don't know. Personally, I want to call it quits on this before it breaks, before you seriously do some damage.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't want Vader and Obi-Wan. If there's a second season, no Vader.
Yeah. I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah. You know, if Hayden wants to come back and be Vader, do something else.
Well, he's doing Ahsoka, so we do have that. But he's not, I don't think, you know, the only way he could be Vader and Ahsoka would be flashbacks. Yeah.
So, you know, do another, you know, series with Vader. You know, maybe, I don't know if there's a story that's important enough to be told.
I could see,
saving Luke from Tusken Raider attacks.
I could see one idea. You could have like an overarching story beat, an overarching story of him speaking with Qui-Gon recurringly, where they're discussing, you know, something about the connection with the Force, something maybe Obi-Wan can't get to yet, and Qui-Gon's trying to help him understand it. You know, the whole concept of being able to reclaim your. Yeah, you know, the whole idea of the Force Ghost is that the consciousness is able to reclaim itself, basically. Instead of just becoming mixed in with the collective, it manages to reform itself into the individual. So it could be that, but also the side story could be maybe a Jedi comes along similar to how season one started, but instead of Obi-Wan turning him away, maybe this time he helps him.
It just can't. The story can't be too big because
it can't be too big.
You can't obviously advertise Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah,
like, you know, the Empire cannot know.
Yeah,
where Obi-Wan Kenobi is.
Yeah,
and it seems like if he got into some intergalactic conflict, that would bring all the eyes down on this. Hey, Obi-Wan Kenobi, what? You know.
Yeah. So I guess the big thing would be if they do, they need to come up. They'll have to really come up with a good idea that maybe doesn't involve the Empire, or at least the Upper Empire. If anybody, you know, like lower grunts come and become involved, they don't make it any further than the episode that they step into.
The only way I could see them, at least in terms of furthering the Obi-Wan mythos and story, would be in some way them in enhancing or furthering that image of him being a crazy old man on Tatooine. Mm-hmm. You know, because like, just like when he was talking to Luke, saying that your uncle was afraid you'd go off with old Obi-Wan on some damn full idealistic crusade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what
I'm
saying?
I could see that now, though.
So what?
I could see that now with how he talks about. Well, also with how he sees Obi-Wan is, you know, he's this great warrior. They're all wanted and dead. He would want Luke to go off on a crusade to take down the Empire, and for him, that would be a crazy idealistic crusade.
Right. So it's just unless there's some way of playing with that kind of that part of the canon, it's just, I don't know. I feel like it would be almost like unnecessary. I don't know. I don't know what else they could do.
How about this?
No, I don't know. I was just going to say, I don't know, other than my own selfishness wants more Obi-Wan and more Qui-Gon and stuff like that. Oh, yeah. I don't know what else to do.
Would it break canon?
Bring in the Black Sun.
That could be interesting.
On Tatooine, Prince Shizor.
Would it break canon if I would love to see Shizor appear in canon? Would it break canon if like say there was a second season, if there was a beat in the story where he visited Dagobah?
I don't know that would break canon. There's nothing in Empire or Return of the Jedi that says he's never been to Dagobah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they'd have to obviously come up with something that makes sense for why he would go to Yoda anyways. But it's an interesting, that could be an interesting idea to have them reconnect and, you know, him maybe fill in Yoda on what's happened. Yeah, you know, Anakin, do you know he's not dead?
He's actually like Darth Vader.
He's a machine man.
Oh, yeah, he's a machine man.
He's a big machine man.
I cut him open. He's in there.
I know it's Anakin.
I ain't a lot of him, but he's in there.
All right.
He's a little charred. Right. He's a little bacony, but he's Anakin.
All right. So I guess we need to wrap it up. Just final thoughts on this thing, and I'll let each of you go. To me, I love the series, even though it had its minor issues, CGI especially. They really need to invest more money in. If they do a second season, invest more money in it to make it look pretty. Not that it didn't look pretty. There was just some scenes that looked really kind of, you know, it kind of took me out. But overall, this episode wrapped everything up in a nice bow and made every other episode even better than before. Yeah, I mean, this was just a great, great series to me. Austin?
I think it was a great ending to the series. I mean, overall, it was just like on par with the rest of it, but just like that lightsaber fight in the end wrapped it up. I would say overall, I wasn't overly impressed with Reva's or the actress's performance as Reva. She was okay, but I just felt like it probably could have been done better. But not enough to like, oh God, I hate that. I hated that role or that character or whatever. I just felt like it was kind of whatever. It was subpar or whatever. It could have maybe somebody could have picked it up, maybe done better, but it did what it needed to.
But there are rumors that she might get a series. I've heard rumors. Have you heard that, Ashley?
Moses
Ingram.
That'd be interesting if they
turn that into something. I
would still care. Yeah, I'd still check it out. There's always room for growth. Yeah. And it's like I just felt like her just playing this whole time, playing that just mean character. It just felt, I don't know. It never felt as scary or as real as I felt like maybe somebody else probably could pull it off, you know, but that's just an acting thing. But other than that, overall, great ending to the series. So good. Love
Ray, final thoughts.
We've kind of been in an age lately, maybe with Star Wars, where it's been really hard, at least with Jedi stuff, to stick the landing. You know, we kind of missed the ball on, you know, that with Rise of Skywalker and Boba Fett recently. I mean, my opinion different from everybody else, but this one, I really think they nailed the landing with how they ended, especially, you know, so much new stuff. I think this is the first live action time that it feels like they haven't been so scared about the Force mysticism. It always felt like there was kind of a fear in J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson to delve too far into the Jedi stuff. They wanted to kind of keep it surface level almost. But I loved it here. And all the new stuff, you know, really making use of the lighting, the fight choreography, the fight camera work, you know, especially in this final episode. But yeah, I loved it. Probably might be my favorite right now of the Disney Plus Star Wars series. If not my favorite, tied with Mandalorian.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Exactly. Yeah. All right, so that's going to wrap us up. If you want to comment on this, please go ahead. Leave a comment. Tell us your thoughts on the episode. We'd love to hear that. And
don't stab worry, that subscribe button.
Yes, yeah, hit the subscribe it. Button. Stab it. Stab it with your lightsaber.
Put it on but the also, news.
This or, is probably or, not the end. Or, huh? Or use the other side of the hill and smack it. Smack it like you're smacking Brayden, smacking that life support thing on Vader. Smack
Kenobi
it.
It.
Kenobi smack it. Kenobi it. Take
it. Break it. Kenobi it. But don't worry, this is probably not the last we'll talk about this episode, because I think this episode gives us a lot. There's a lot to digest in this and a lot of things that it affects, you know, in other movies that we'll probably hit on eventually down the line. But that's it for this episode. See you next time. May the Force be with you.
Stop.